Well, good afternoon once again, everybody. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. My name is Athena Misson-Foulet. I am the Outreach and Recruitment Manager for the Fulbright Scholar Program at IIE, and thank you for joining us to spend some time to discuss our Fulbright U.S. Scholar Awards in the Middle East and North Africa. We have a few slides to share with you today before we jump into question and answers, but in the meantime, feel free to go ahead and pop your questions in the question box, and I have a colleague who is joining us as well from our program management team who will be able to assist in answering some of those questions with us this afternoon. But the reason we start off with a bit about the mission and the program is because the Fulbright program is unique from other grant opportunities in that it has a very strong mission focus, in that what we are trying to accomplish through these grants is to foster mutual understanding between nations, as well as listed there in that second bullet, advance knowledge across communities and improve lives around the world. So while a lot of your projects are in your particular fields and disciplines, it's important to understand that when applying for a Fulbright grant, you're going to need to address how it's really advancing these goals of promoting that understanding between cultures, the United States and the country, or countries that you are anticipating on going to. So, as I mentioned, this is important that we share in all of our presentations because it gives you context of how to best articulate why you're applying for a Fulbright. But our mission, we are in partnership with 160 countries around the world, and we're seeking a cohort of American scholars to go abroad to teach or conduct research in their field or expertise and partner with hired institutions and institutions of learning and research abroad through our grants annually. It was established in 1946 by an act of Congress, so next year, actually, the 2021-22 academic year is going to be our 75th anniversary, also a very important marker in the course of the history of the program, so it should be a banner year in terms of our offerings and the projects that we're seeking. So it was founded in 1946. And it is considered the flagship international educational and cultural exchange program of the United States government. And as such, we want to make sure that the people participating in the program reflect the full range and scope of American higher ed disciplines, geographic regions, interests, countries of interest that they're going to. And the Fulbright program is congressionally appropriated annually through the Department of State and is funded by by the Institute of International Education, which is the nonprofit organization that I work for and has the honor of administering these programs on behalf of the State Department. I touched briefly on this idea of diversity inclusion. Again, as that flagship program, we want our Fulbright program to be representative of what the American experience is, looks like, and reflects. So that language there is given to us directly from the State Department. All of our opportunities are open to people regardless of their race, color, national origin, sex, age, religion, geographic location, socioeconomic status, disability, sexual orientation, or gender identity. So why Fulbright? Again, these are sort of answers to the quiz when you are being requested to explain to us why exactly are you applying for a Fulbright grant. Of all the granting opportunities out there in the world for you, what about Fulbright is specifically drawing you to apply? And these are some of the things that we find are particularly compelling responses to that. Fulbright fosters relationships that are real and lasting. You'll have these continued collaborations with your partners overseas for a long time. It allows you the opportunity to expand your publishing network. You become more multicultural in your classroom, so many of you may already have international experience and ties to that region, whether through collaborative work already on this field or this topic, but you're also bringing that back to your home institution and communities when you come back to the United States, so that's an important factor to bring in too. This is an opportunity to serve as a cultural ambassador. You'll gain professional recognition as being identified as a Fulbright scholar. By the end of this current academic year, we are going to surpass the 400,000 participant mark. So there'll have been over 400,000 people participating in Fulbright exchanges since the 1940s. So that's a vibrant alumni network of people committed to those lasting ideals of the mission of advancing mutual understanding across cultures. The Fulbright program is family friendly. Approximately 60% of our awards provide dependent support. So if you'd like to bring any dependents with you, this is, again, a cultural and public diplomacy initiative and project. We want the full family experience to be possible for in as many countries as we can allow. And Fulbright is supportive. We really work in close collaboration with our alumni when they return to share those experience and keep the impact and scope of their Fulbright grant to their larger community and audiences when they return. We have, when again you're talking about the larger Fulbright universe or the constellation of Fulbright opportunities available to scholars and students to go abroad as well as just come to the United States, what we're going to talk about today is going to be that first bullet point. We're focusing on the 800 grants for U.S. scholars and administrators to go abroad annually. That said, if you're interested in bringing foreign nationals to your departments, we have opportunities for about 900 visiting scholars to come to the U.S. annually. This U.S. student program sends over 2,000 abroad. We also receive over 4,000 graduate students to the United States, and we also have teaching assistantships in the realm of about 400 annually. So I mentioned earlier about 400,000 will be participating in that program. We'll be crossing that threshold by the end of this year. So whittling down a little bit more on that U.S. scholar piece that we are here to talk about today, U.S. citizenship is required. The green experiences will be stipulated in each of the awards. Your PhD, a PhD or a terminal degree is required for many of our opportunities. An MA and higher education teaching or professional experience would be required. And this is just sort of the range of what those eligibility requirements might be. And if you are a professional or in the field, an artist, a professional artist, we are looking for substantial accomplishments in the range of about a minimum of 5 to 10 years post-degree. And teaching experience is listed there because in some cases a country will say they want someone with no less than 5 years of university PhD advising teaching experience. Some will say they are seeking people on the earlier side of their career. All of that, again, is written and outlined in that catalog of awards. And we have policies regarding the number of previous Fulbright grants awarded to you. There's a waiting period now of 2 years. So I like to say that there's a Fulbright for everyone somewhere in the world, but there's not a Fulbright for everyone everywhere in the world. So that really means finding a Fulbright that works for you. We have, I mentioned, over 160 countries that participate in the program for the scholar program. We're in about 135 this coming cycle. So what that means is being able to draft the kind of proposal and project that you have in mind and really find the suitable match for what you're intending to do. So we have opportunities through postdoctoral, recent postdocs through emeriti, adjunct, and dependent scholars. We have flex options in about 63 countries around the world that would allow you to visit the country for multiple visits over the course of 2 years. And we have regional research awards as well in most parts of the world that would allow you to explore a particular theme across the whole region. So when it comes to selecting that right award, again, finding that match is critical and key. Keep in mind any sort of regional experience and language ability. We encourage you to also take a close look at discipline preferences. Some countries are going to be very specific in terms of the kind of fields that they're looking to help build capacity in their different departments. So that'll often be listed in that catalog. Otherwise, a majority of the countries we are in also have these all discipline awards that will basically leave it up to you to make a compelling case to be in country for that period of time. So again, things to also consider: is the project relevant to the host country and how will the communities there and at home benefit from that project? And again, making sure you're applying for the right award. Don't apply for a postdoc if you have over 20 years of experience as in your field, and vice versa. Don't apply for a distinguished chair or administrator award if you're just getting started. So I'll be taking us to the catalog of awards shortly, but for those of you who haven't seen it yet, I just wanted to highlight this opportunity in Morocco. and how to really read a lot of this information. So this is telling you that there are options to do full-time research, full-time teaching, or a combination of teaching research, split semester by semester. And for those who are teaching, you should be in touch with the university where you intend to teach. And it gives you a little bit of background in terms of how long class hours are. It's 2 hours long and meets once a week. So you should expect to teach 2 to 8 class hours per week. So this is some good guidance there in terms of when it's time to build out your syllabi and build out your project statement. When we're asking you how you plan to be spending your time there, they're spelling out exactly how that should be broken down. For researchers, to the degree possible, you should be able to identify where you'll be doing that research, and community engagement is welcome. So that basically means that if you are truly intending to be a competitive applicant for this award, you should involve some element of community engagement and are encouraged to give public lectures in your field as well. So on this right-hand side, you'll see that projects and activities that are being funded are similar to those options there, peer research, peer teaching, or a combination of both. The deadline is September 15th. And I would encourage you all at this stage, we are a little over less than a month away, go ahead and click the begin application process there so that you start to receive additional updates and information about these awards as we're coming close to the deadline. So the actual application process, we have the following requirements: an application form, project statement, which is 3 to 5 pages, your CV or resume. We're only requiring 2 letters of recommendation this year. In previous years, it was 3, but this year, you're only asking for 2. Language proficiency report, if it's required by the specific award that you're applying for, and the letter of invitation, if required also, which has an extended deadline of October 15th this year. And again, depending on that award, you'll be required to submit course outlines or syllabi, select bibliography for your research, and portfolio submissions for those who are practicing artists. We're spending a little bit more time before we get to question and answer on the project statement. This is the most critical piece of the whole puzzle. This is an opportunity for you to focus on what you plan to do and be very specific in terms of the courses you plan to teach, the goals of your research, and your methodology. And we also ask that you explain the anticipated impact of your award to your host, your home institution, and yourself as an individual. We have supplemental questions now to sort of not detract from your 3 to 5 page project statement, but our reviewers, we really want to get a good sense from you as to, again, why are you applying specifically for the Fulbright Award? Why this particular country? Take the opportunity as well to address how adaptable are you and how well do you deal with challenging situations? And how will you adapt your materials for your host culture so you won't be working with an audience of American students necessarily or in the field of American business? How are you going to be modifying your methods to adapt to this new environment that you're seeking to be in for during your duration of your Fulbright? So let's say you are interested in going to a country, but many countries will identify institutions. So in the case on the left, they say the University of Iran and the University of Algiers are the two institutions that you may affiliate with. For the purposes of just showing you another example, in Jordan, however, you're able to affiliate with any appropriate Jordanian university. All of those are finally and officially confirmed by the commission in Jordan. But they're also saying that it's organizations or institutions that are not officially partnered with them yet, there's still a possibility to do so on a case-by-case basis. So it's all subject to review of the commission. So all of that will also vary from country to country. Please read that information in that catalog. So let's say a host is not identified. Where to start? I think reviewing the award description for other suggested hosts or resources will be a great place to do that. Take a look at our scholar directories to see what U.S. scholars have gone abroad in previous years, as well as what visiting scholars are here in the United States from that country. And the international office on your campus might have relationships already in the world, region, or country that you're proposing to go to and might have some contacts for you. So a little bit more on that letter of invitation. So if a letter of invitation is required, what you should be asking for from your host should include the following. Please be sure that they understand it's a non-binding expression of interest from the host abroad. They're basically just letting us know that you're interested in affiliating with their institution, they're familiar with the work that you intend to do, and should you receive Fulbright funding, they would be happy to pursue discussions and how to make that happen. It should come from the person who you will be collaborating, and it should be on institution letterhead. And again, the deadline for that this year is going to be October 15th to give colleagues a little bit more time to respond to that. And this is my last slide before we open it up for question and answer. But so the application cycle. We open the competition annually in February with that September 15th deadline. So September 15th, 2020 will be for the 21-22 academic year, meaning September 15th, 2021 will be for 22-23, the 22-23 academic year. And what happens once you click submit in September, there's a technical review for completeness, making sure you've met all of the eligibility requirements and all of your components of your application have been submitted. There is a peer review in the United States from October to November, and only in November will you first hear whether or not you've been recommended for further consideration and review in host country. And when the information is then forwarded to the host country, final decisions are made from January through April. And beginning in May, we start to send additional grant documentations and paperwork for you to fill out before participating in your grant. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and do a quick peek in the questions section. Great, so we have a couple here already. I'll do a quick round of answering these questions, and then I'll also take us to our website as well to point out some additional resources for you. So a question is, shall I include a letter of invitation in the application? If it is mentioned, applicant should not include a letter of invitation. No. If it says you should not get a letter of invitation, then you should definitely not include one in your application. Okay, the next question is, could I please speak to the one or two page project summary written in a language of a North African host country? Is this only in Morocco and French or Arabic preferred? I'm going to need to look more closely at the award to get back to you on that, but hold on and we'll be sure to get that answer for you. We have another question saying, my degree is not in the pull down list. What does not specified mean? I'm assuming you mean in the application portal, once you fill out your name and information, that when you do a drop-down, your degree isn't possible. If I were you, it's hard to do this without having that in front of you right now, but if I were you, I would send us a message to scholars@iie.org to see what that could possibly look like. If you can send us a screenshot or something of what you're talking about, that might help, and we can try to see what would make the most sense in terms of suiting the matching the degree that you'd like to list there. Do we need only one letter of invitation per country, or is it better to get more than one? So as far as those letters of invitation, they should match however many institutions you're being affiliated with for your project. So your project is driving that. If you are going to be at more than one institution, then yes, I would get the letters of invitation from the institutions that you are working with. But if you're only planning to teach or research at one place, then one is more than adequate. Do you recommend will be considered for other awards? Again, I'm sorry, I don't understand that question clearly. But I know there is a section in the application that is asking you to include alternate countries that you would be interested in listing. I think that might be what you're talking about. If that's the case, then yes, I would always, I know your grants and your projects would be written for very specific countries and very specific projects. But if there are other countries, either within that region or outside of it, that you think there could be a viable way for you to conduct a similar project in those regions, and I would add those as alternate countries as well, but I would not let that be a factor, however, in your ability to craft your project statement for that specific country that you're really applying to. How important is it to get a letter of invitation if it is preferred, not required? If it's preferred, I would definitely get it. If it's not required, it would depend on the country again. But I would say that if it's not required, this year, given that you're given a little bit of time to also get that letter, I would include it as well, because it would just give your reviewers a better sense of how prepared the country, the institution in that country is interested and willing to host you. But if it's not required, that also means that it won't be held against anybody for not securing one. But if it says it's preferred, then I would absolutely secure that letter. We have another question saying that they're not affiliated with, I'm sorry, let me expand this window. I am not affiliated with an institution. You're currently an independent scholar. Fantastic. We love independent scholars. You have a record of IRB approval for the project and would like to continue in the Fulbright Award you're applying for. Should I or can I connect to that earlier IRB approval? I would check with the restrictions of your previous IRB approval to see if it can be extended to incorporate your new project, because that I think there might be some restrictions on that, but or your subsequent Fulbright project that is an offshoot of that. But in terms of an individual ethics review, that'll definitely be part of securing that IRB for the work that you're intending on doing. So I would check on the, I would verify that with the initial one that you received to see if it falls within that scope. Can the letter of recommendation be from an institution director, such as a local museum, which I've worked closely to create an exhibit, or former colleagues in the field? No, the letter of recommendation should be from anyone who can best speak to your ability to conduct the work that you're planning to do. So the letters of invitation are more for, again, getting a sense of how that institution in the country knows you and how well you fit their particular goals and needs for that coming year in terms of the project that you're doing. Your letters of recommendation, on the other hand, are really meant to paint a picture of who you are as a scholar in your field and how you're best qualified to conduct the work that you're planning to do. So if this person is a director of a local museum, which you work closely with and knows your skill set and capabilities to do what you're doing, then I would definitely go with whomever can best explain that to the reviewers, best support that case. Would a current lack of institutional affiliation adversely affect an application? No. We have plenty of independent scholars participating in our grants. We have professionals going on our grants who aren't affiliated in higher ed. A lot of our awards are in partnership and conjunction with higher ed institutions, but by no means is that the only place that we're affiliated in working with. We discussed briefly some local museums. There are some research institutes as well. So institutional affiliation does not affect your application. Especially in the world of academia, there's a lot of transition oftentimes, especially this year, so that will not affect that. What kind of details do you look for in the letter of invitation for research? So I'm happy to go over that again. The letter of invitation for research should describe, your access to the materials that you need, that they're granting that access, that they're interested in the work that you're doing, that the research that you're doing is going to fit well within what their goals and plans are for that particular topic, or how it is especially timely, I think would be also very good. So those letters of invitation tend to be a little bit more compelling when they can talk about how you're particularly well-suited to assist them in the particular project, or your field or your expertise is bringing a particular skill set to that department or to that place that you're doing the work. I'm sorry, it sounds like there were some audio issues earlier, but I think we are back on track. How is COVID affecting the awards? Okay, so the State Department in March issued a Global 4 travel advisory that has been lifted, I think, a few weeks ago. And so the Fulbright program is on a case-by-case basis, country-by-case basis, looking into restarting grant activities for some programs in the fall, but a majority of programs, especially for the scholar side of the discussion, in the spring of 2021. All of these opportunities that we're talking about now, which is for the September 15th deadline, is for fall 22-23. So we're not anticipating COVID necessarily having a direct impact on people leaving for their grants next fall. Obviously, everyone is watching this on a daily basis, on a week-by-week basis even, so we have not received any indication that COVID will be affecting the departures for the fall of next year, which is, again, the opportunities that we're talking about for the 2021-22 academic cycle. Can you speak about the detail of the syllabi, please? Is a day-to-day with details of reading activities, et cetera, best, or is a more general syllabus describing objectives, course expectations, and broad overview of major assignments? I would tend to advise more detail, the more detailed the better, because we really want to get a sense of what you are doing on a day-by-day basis. That helps really paint the picture that you're trying to help the reviewers understand what your activities are going to be when you're in country. So I would be as specific as possible in that. You were named an alternate for the fall 2020. Congratulations. However, it was canceled. Yes, I will be replying. Which documents can be reused? Also, can I submit 3 letters of recommendation? Fall for 2020 was canceled. Again, depending on the country, there's a lot at work at the moment there, so I don't want to speak in too general terms. I'm glad you're reapplying. And which documents can be reused? All of them can. As an applicant, you can go into the Slate system and download your previous application. And no, we're only accepting 2 letters of recommendation this year. So please limit that to 2. But if you'd like to reuse your project statement, I would obviously be to your benefit. We won't tell you what to do, but it would be to your benefit to update the project because we are obviously in a very different world than we were when you probably first applied, so maybe incorporating a little bit of that, I wouldn't necessarily feel too much pressure to go overboard in the modification of it, but it is a fresh competition, so we would encourage you to address how things might have changed since your last project proposal. We have someone considering Bahrain. It says this invitation should not be sought. But in the country overview, it says it's encouraged to establish contact with potential host institutions as early as possible to determine the feasibility. Yes, so contact universities. It says you're encouraged to provide them and contact them, but don't necessarily go so far as to contact them, get a sense of what their needs are, collaborate on a project that might make sense, but don't go that final step in getting a commitment of some sort. I mean, it's not a non-binding letter, I get that, but do not box yourself into only being affiliated at that one particular campus or that particular institution. I hope that helps. But yes, if they're saying they're encouraged to contact potential host institutions, they want to make sure that you know what the situation on the ground is in that country, and they want you establishing that relationship to better inform your own project. But it says do not seek that letter because they don't want you to go that final step in locking yourself into one particular institution. My host says she can't directly give me the letter. The research dean or office will provide the letter. Is that acceptable? That's fine. Yes. If it is possible, I would have that letter include that host's name or that, you know, the institution partnering with this particular host is extending this letter. And again, I would just make sure that it is as clear to what they're going to be able to provide you when you are in country in terms of access to materials and space, etc. Is it possible to apply for a Fulbright in more than one country in a certain year? The answer to that is unfortunately no, except in the case of these regional awards. So there are regional research awards that would allow you to explore a particular theme across countries within a particular region. So you actually are applying just for that one award, but you are proposing to conduct your research in multiple countries. So that is possible, but to apply for more than one award in any given cycle is not possible. Any resources for those writing letters of recommendation to guide them on what Fulbright is looking for? Yes, I'm happy to. I'll show you on our website where that information is. So I have two questions that I'll be getting back to you. How detailed should a syllabus be? As detailed as possible within the limits of the attachment size and what is possible through that. So we really want to see how exactly what you're intending to teach and the detail of the work that you're doing on a day-by-day basis in country. Can I select any country I want to cooperate with in the Fulbright Global Award? Yes, it needs to be a country that's participating in the program, but as long as the country is participating in Fulbright and they are represented in that catalog of awards, you are able to select whichever countries you are interested in. I will say that we actually just reached out to our applicants for the Global Award, that we did some preliminary analysis, and the Global Award will by far be the most competitive Fulbright Scholar Award this cycle. And we are strongly encouraging people who are applying to the Global Award to consider applying for a single country award. That letter, I think, is going out today, if not tomorrow. So something else to keep in mind with that. Okay, questions are still coming, but I wanted to pause here to show you additional resources on our website. So bear with me as I do that. So this is our website, cies.org. You can browse, you can access the catalog of awards here, or you can access it directly at awards.cies.org. By going back to our homepage, some of the resources I wanted to show you. If you click Explore the U.S. Scholar Program, lots of great information here. You can access the catalog again. We have virtual webinars and advising sessions, links to the application. But if you go to the Applications tab right here, you can register your interest, start your application. There's an eligibility checklist. Application instructions that are very detailed. We definitely encourage you to read that very carefully. And here are the requirements for the project statement, the CV, resume, recommendation letters, and portfolio submissions. So I'm going to click recommendation letters. And here are some guidelines on that. Who can serve as your recommender? And for the recommenders, here are some questions that they should consider answering on your behalf. So definitely look at that. I'm going to go back one page, go back to the application tab. If you continue, I'm scrolling down. So if you're doing research, here are some bibliography requirements. For teaching, I'm going to right-click that to open it in another tab. You're asking how much detail to go down, how far down that rabbit hole, so to speak, on those details. And here's some information there. It's up to 10 pages total. Okay, and going back to our homepage and the application tab, the letter of invitation language is here too. So the award description by far is going to be the most critical reference point you have, whether or not a letter of invitation is required. If it is required, there's this link here about invitation and developing contacts abroad that goes into a lot of detail. So how to request one, include a copy of your CV and description of the activities you'd like to pursue. You may request a letter, but be aware that whoever's a letter of invitation cannot also serve as a referee for the same applicant. Also note, this is actually a good point, a single institution is free to send letters to multiple candidates, so be aware that that might be a situation going on too. The letter should be in English, and you should provide an English translation with your application if necessary, and just additional guidance here. Okay, let's see. Going back to the, I think that's what I, all right, please speak to, okay, we did that one. Can you clarify what is meant by, what is the professional and academic context of your project under the project proposal guide? Is this referring to the project's background? I think you're asking to clarify what we mean by the context of your project. So I think that's, yes, the project background. So what is the reason for which you are needing to conduct this research in that project in that particular country? Just contextualizing it for the reviewers. They will be looking at your application from the discipline perspective, but they'll want a little bit more context in terms of the need for what you're doing, if that makes any sense. Is there any financial obligations from the host institution? That will depend. In some countries, it is a the institution. Some institutions in some countries directly partner with our Fulbright office in those countries. So it will be the Fulbright blank opportunity in American Studies, for example. And if that's the case, then yes, if it's a named grant, then likely that institution has contributed financially to the grant process in some way, whether that be through direct financial contributions, whether that be housing, whether that be a variety of anything that's determined between them and the Fulbright office in that country. But generally, when you are seeking out for this, I'm assuming you're asking because of a letter of invitation. No, there's no need to indicate any sort of financial contributions at that time. That letter of invitation is not meant to, again, be a binding contract of any means whatsoever. But if they would like to say that they are happy to provide housing, or they're happy to waive particular fees or anything like that for you to do your work, that's, you're welcome to do that, but it's not required by any means whatsoever. How many letters of recommendation are needed or allowed? The answer to that is two. Two letters of recommendation this year. I'm applying for a two-country award to Morocco and Spain. I have close collaboration with a partner institution in Spain and will be getting a letter of invitation from there. However, I've been unable to secure a contact at the Mohammed V University in Morocco. How can I get contacts there in the law program? Okay, so this is an interesting problem to troubleshoot. I would definitely reach out to, well, actually, let's see. Let's go to our catalog of awards. Go to Morocco. This is the award I believe you said you are applying for, the Spain Joint Award. I'm going to go to the Country Area Overview tab. This is a tab that is also oftentimes overlooked. I would encourage all of you to read that carefully, because this is exactly where our colleagues in these countries are giving us a little bit of insight in terms of what they are looking for in successful applicants. So Spain and Morocco share environmental history, context, all of that. There's some information here. 2018 web ranking website for Morocco is there. And Fulbright programs for Morocco are available at this website too. So I would visit these websites. See what information you can glean from there and see if that would be of any help. I would also, and this links directly to the Fulbright Morocco site. I would reach out to them as well to see if they know of anybody at that university that they could put you in contact with. And I would also, I'll open a new tab, going to our homepage, take a look at the scholar directory. Sorry, I probably did that way too fast. Let me start again. From our homepage, CIES.org, right here is the View Fulbright Scholar Directory. So what I'm going to do is click Advanced Filters to add the program country, Morocco. And see, one, if there's anybody who's come from that institution. So this person, oops, I clicked forward. So it looks like several people, U.S. scholars, have gone abroad and been affiliated there. And it looks like this person was here in 2018, 2019 from that institution and was in the field of sociology. Looks like they're retired. But if you can find a little bit more information about this scholar, as a Fulbright scholar to the United States in 2018, 2019 at Spokane Falls Community College, they might be able to put you in contact with somebody at their home institution as well. So that was the scholar directory, again, resource. And I would also just encourage you all to take a look in there to see what projects are happening in your particular academic discipline. Do keyword search for words in your field of study. It's pretty interesting information there. Okay. Are there any advisors who could talk to us and help guide us which places we'd be best fit? I don't speak another language fluently, so I'm assuming I can only go to English-speaking countries, which does narrow it down. That is not correct, actually. The only countries that require you to conduct your grant in the language of that country are in Francophone Africa. They still require you to teach and work in French. And some countries in Latin America still require Spanish or Portuguese, but that's by no means a hard and fast rule. If the language of your field happens to be English or the place that you are conducting your research is an English-speaking lab, library, museum, or whatever, that is absolutely fine. But other than places in Latin America and Francophone Africa, most of the world expects American scholars to teach in English. So that should not necessarily be a factor in terms of applying for Fulbright, you know, getting by in the country and, you know, obviously those sort of things, having that language capability obviously will help, but language skills in terms of being able to teach your field is not, should not be a factor in that. So I hope you definitely consider looking at our opportunities and finding one that suits what you're hoping to accomplish. How about if the institution is not listed on the drop-down list? I am not sure what drop-down list you're referring to in this one. I'm assuming you mean in the application, or if you mean in the letter of invitation. If it's in the letter of invitation and it's not listed, just read carefully because sometimes the countries will say these are will affiliate any institution including the following, which means that these are just ones that they've probably previously had relationships with, but if it says any institution, they'll be willing to to work with you to do that, if that's where you were looking. If you're talking about that application, I would have to open it in front of me, but I do believe there's an other box that you can add your institution to if it's not listed in the application. But so depending on whichever one that is, those are two different answers for you. Can you go back to the slide that outlines the application? Sure. Oops, that wasn't it. Here we go. Application components. I'll go ahead and leave it on this line. Do you have lists of potential collaborators at universities in each country? I'm having difficulty finding someone in the West Bank. I'm sorry, we do not necessarily have a list of collaborators at those universities in those countries, but that scholar directory would be a fantastic resource for you to see who has done work, again, who's been in that region or who has come from there to do work in the United States. But we don't maintain that list of collaborations or collaborators. What sorts of activities would be appropriate in terms of being an ambassador? Public lectures, community outreach, mentoring students? Yes, all of those above. Those are fantastic ideas. So when you're talking about being an ambassador, making yourself available for public lectures, community outreach, that might be a good question for your hosts if you have somebody lined up. Like, what initiatives are in place, and how can you add value or add expertise to whatever might be already happening? Is there an America Center in that country, or is there a club or a group that you can be working collaboratively with? All of those are great suggestions on how to be an ambassador. And again, don't forget that piece about coming back home. Yes, you'll be doing your work in that country, but you could be coming back home. So what does being an ambassador about from that country to the United States mean? How are you going to expand our understanding of that culture when you return to the U.S.? When contacting the host institution, should I need to provide my research teaching project summary with the host institution? Yes. As per that website with the invitation instructions, I would encourage you to reach out with your CV and an abstract of what you would plan to do. In writing a syllabus, should I use the standards that are required of me to teach the course in the United States? Should I use the standards that are associated with the host country? Oh, it turns like this person left already. Sorry to miss them, but to answer the question anyway, yes, the standards should be how you'll be teaching it in that country. We're going to want to see that it's adapted to the place that you'll be teaching it. So for Israel, there is a choice between applying for a specific university or for Israel for 8 positions. I'm sorry, I don't understand the question here. The information provided here wasn't enough. So Ann Dickerson, if you could clarify that, I'm happy to. But yes, for Israel, we have specific university named awards where the grants will be to that specific country, postdoc in Haifa, for example, while there are other awards that are sort of open to any affiliation. So those are definitely options in Israel. One of my letters of reference is coming from the director of the organizations I'll be working with. For that reason, I will not ask for additional LOI. Should I have her mention this in her letter of recommendation? Sure. That can hurt if you're like, you know, I am fulfilling this role as a recommender rather than a letter of invitation for the institution. That would be fine. I thought I read in the instructions concerning letters of invitation that they should come from an administrator, but it should come from the person. It should come from the person you are collaborating with. The person you are collaborating with. Do I need to provide the countries I want to go? Yes, the global award application is very specific. You need to have a very clear and well laid out plan for all of the work that you're doing in each country. I can't state that enough. The global award, so while the majority of our opportunities will be reviewed in one specific country, the global award will be reviewed in up to 3 different countries. So that needs to be, how they all fit together is going to be critical for any competitive application to that opportunity. The website says to clearly tailor the CV for a Fulbright Award. Can I give example of what that means? Yes. So only make sure that what you're putting in your CV directly relates to what you are trying to accomplish. So many academics and professionals have very robust CVs and experiences in this world, but I would, given the space constraints, I would make sure that your CV is really primarily focused on activities that have directly impacted or relate to the work that you're trying to do on your Fulbright. I'd like to take a screenshot. Okay, hopefully you were able to do that, or let me know if there's a specific page you'd need me to go back to, but I think you might have been the one asking for the application components. Can you get a letter of recommendation from a colleague in the university in which I am receiving the letter of invitation? Yes, you can. Yes, you can receive a letter of recommendation from a colleague at that university. It just can't be the same person. All right, somebody saying they unfortunately didn't hear audio. Sorry to hear that. Do I need to provide the country's name I want to go to in the Fulbright? Yes. That is, selecting countries is an integral part of the application process. I contacted Morocco Fulbright via email, and they said the deadline is October 13th. I'm confused, the scholar program. Okay, so it depends. There's a lot of different Fulbright programs out there. So depending on what you were asked, they might have interpreted you as somebody from Morocco applying to come to the United States, or they could have been referring to that letter of invitation. That deadline is October 15th, not the 13th, though. So if you are talking about opportunities for U.S. scholars to go abroad through the U.S. scholar program teaching research for a semester or two, that deadline is September 15th. But yes, there are several other Fulbright programs with October deadlines, but off the top of my head, I don't know one for October 13th, but they might have been thinking that the letter of invitation was due the 13th. The deadline is September 15th, but we are giving folks that additional month to attach that letter of invitation if needed. But that being said, everything else needs to be submitted on the 15th. For this coming deadline, when would the earliest project start be? Can we propose the project to start in May 21? That is really dependent on when the academic year starts in the country that you're going to. I haven't heard of institutions starting academic years as early as May for the 21 cycle. I have heard June and July in some parts of the world, but I don't think I've heard of May. But again, depending on the institution you're going to and the countries that you're going to, if their academic year or the project starts in May and they're on board with that, then I can imagine that being feasible in some places. It would really all depend on the country and the award you're applying to. The candidate profile suggests professionals, academic, all levels, including early career. I am an independent scholar with 2 years of professional experience. Am I eligible? It will depend if the award requires 2 years is a little low. Generally, it's looking for a minimum of 5 years. But when we refer to postdocs in early career, we're looking at people post their graduate degree. So if you have your terminal degree in hand and you're 2 years out, then yes, you would definitely fall within the postdoc category, possibly even early career. But if you don't have your terminal degree and you have 2 years of professional experience out of your BA, then you would most likely be a stronger candidate for the Fulbright student program. I'm not sure I can honestly say how my intended host institution would benefit from my presence there. I really need them more than they need me. Can I just talk about that? Yes, you can. But it would just be more compelling for our reviewers to see that, you know, they're getting something out of this exchange as well. We have 5 more minutes. I'm just trying to be cognizant of time. 1, 2, 3, 4. We have quite a few more awards, so I'm going to try to get through as many of these as I can. Are projects only approved by the U.S. Embassy and the Ministry of Education of the host country, or does the institution have to approve projects as well? That will depend. In some countries, they definitely do meet in consultation with some of these host institutions, but the U.S. Embassy and Ministry of Education of that host country, that I wouldn't assume that those people are directly involved in any of this review. So keep that in mind. If we would like to do a research project in Palestine, can we apply through Israel? And there are no research positions in Palestine. I would need to carefully look at the Israel description to see if something like that would be viable. But Alicia, if you'd like to send us a message to Middle East North Africa at IIE.org, we can take a closer look at that for you. I'm sorry, I did not quite understand. The applications we are completing now would be for September 2022. No, the application deadline for September 15, 2020, the one that's coming up in a month, is for fall 21. So a year out. The second recommendation has to be from a colleague in the same discipline. So what does it mean, the same discipline? Does it mean that this faculty is teaching the same subject as me? No. The letters of recommendation should be from somebody, again, who can speak to the project and your ability to conduct it. So generally, that would be somebody in your field, just so that they can give the context as a peer in that regard. But I'm not even sure that that is a requirement either. So if you could direct us to where that might be, that would be helpful. Do I need a university in Oman and Jordan to provide the letter of invitation, or private institution or center will be fine? I would check the catalog of awards, but the private institution or a center should be fine if it says that it's open to any other institution. Or in Jordan, I think earlier we did when we visited the catalog of awards, it said that it's other institutions may be added on a case-by-case basis. So yes, they, at least for that one, we know it's open to private institutions. How in-depth should our research proposal methodology be in a project proposal so that it can be digestible to a non-academic reviewer? I would be pretty in-depth, if you can, in your methodology. This is reviewed by people in relative, not necessarily your exact field, but in your academic discipline. So they are going to have a sense of what your methodology will be, but I would be sure, you're right, I would make sure that your goals and objectives will be clear to somebody who is not necessarily well-versed in your field. To just demonstrating the impact and the need for the work needs to be clear outside of that, but in terms of your methodology, I would be as specific as you can. I have more than two letter writers I usually rely on. Do you have any advice on selecting which ones to ask for support? Yes, I would ask for support from the person who can speak best to your unique skill set to conduct the work that you're planning to do. So somebody who has a little bit of knowledge in terms of what you plan to accomplish, or maybe even what this concept of public diplomacy and citizen diplomacy in exchange, and somebody who knows you, your skill set, I think would be the best people to write letters for you. Are bibliographies uploaded separately from the research proposal? Yes, there is a separate bibliography upload. Came late. Can you please send me this webinar? Also, can I have your contact information as well? Sure. This webinar will be archived and sent to everybody who's registered, so keep a lookout for that email. And our email address is one word, MiddleEastNorthAfrica@IIE.org. Second recommendation letter has to be from colleagues in the same discipline. So what does that mean? Okay, I answer that one. Is there a problem with pairing a Fulbright Award with other potential awards like ACLS grants for the same project? Not on our side of things. We have no problem with Fulbright dovetailing in with other opportunities. In fact, we kind of like that idea that Fulbright is being able to extend or expand upon another opportunity, but I would check with ACLS if they have any restrictions in terms of accepting funding from others. I'm applying to the Jordan Research Program. Can you direct me to the same page as you did for Morocco so I can get information about institutions as well? Sure. Happy to do that. Let me pause my screen here. Okay, I'm going to reset the criteria, country area, Jordan, search awards. So Jordan, can you direct me to the same page? Okay. So Jordan specifically says, any appropriate Jordanian university, all host institutions will be confirmed by the commission in that country. Accredited and registered host institutions outside of public or private will be accepted on a case-by-case basis and subject to review by the commission. So They don't list specific countries. Oh, or were you talking about the scholar directory? Oh, I think you might have been talking about the scholar directory. Okay, so let's go to the Fulbright scholar directory page. Our homepage, scholar directory, and I'm going to go advanced filter, program country, Jordan. And so here's a listing of people going back to 2010 of U.S. scholars who've gone abroad and Jordanian scholars coming to the United States. Hope that helps. Thank you so much. I'm glad your questions were answered, okay? For my project, the letter of invitation is preferred. I sent a request, haven't received. Will it negatively impact your application? It depends. Does it say that that letter is required? If it's required, then, oh no, you just said preferred. It should not negatively impact your project. I think we all know that we're in a world right now that that letter might be harder and harder to get, but I do encourage you to keep trying. You have a little bit more time for that till October 15th. And if you never do get it, please at least indicate that in your project, your proposal that, you know, attempts to secure one have been sought. I mean, that would be good to know. Do I need to take a language test if I receive the language evaluation from my professor for Arabic? Depends. There's a lot of things. You're only required to submit that language test if it's required for the work that you're planning to do. So, and if that's the case, I would, yes, have a language professor evaluate you if possible. Are the additional questions this year for peer review or for the country? Which one applies, or both? Both. Peer review is the first ones to see it. So again, keep in mind, if you don't make it past that review in the United States, the country will not really see your application. So, but those questions were for both. I can help with the individual who's interested in the West Bank. Oh, thank you, Susan. So the woman interested in being affiliated in the West Bank, there's somebody on this call who said that she'd be happy to work with you on that. Reach out to us and we can try to put you two in touch. I don't want to read your email out in public here. Okay, we are 2 minutes over, and I'm sorry we didn't get to all of your questions. I have a little bit more time, so I'm going to try to get through as many of these as we can. We'll stay on for about 10 more minutes if that's fine. And again, this will all be recorded and posted. Can I choose a topic of interest while the areas of interest mentions? Yes. You are in the driver's seat with these awards. You need to determine what your area of interest is and what your project will be. What the award description tells us is what they are interested in funding. So if it's a specific award and it says it's specifically in that field, then it should be in that field. But if it's an all-discipline award, it's really up to you to share what field you're interested in. What's the difference between the U.S. Scholar Program and the Student Program? Okay. So the Scholar Program is for U.S. academics and professionals who are at that scholar level. We are, again, looking at a minimum of 5 to 10 years of experience at the university college level teaching. Traditionally, that's sort of a blanket statement because, again, we have postdoc awards, we have early career awards, we have administrator awards, so that's a blanket statement, but that's sort of the general feel. Scholars are people who are going to go abroad and collaborate at the scholarly level with other scholars in that country. In some cases, you'll be teaching. In a lot of cases, you'll be teaching. Two-thirds of our awards involve an element of teaching. You'll be partnering with different departments there and working at a field at that scholarly level. Oftentimes terminal degree and above, right? The student award is post-baccalaureate through dissertation level. So if you're at your dissertation level already, you're already sort of graduating out of that scholar, or that student competitive window. But the student program is basically post-baccalaureate through about 5 years out of your undergrad. You're still eligible and open competitive for the student grant. Now, we have people who are past that who still apply for the student program, and depending on their award, if it's compelling and interesting, are definitely eligible and able. But the student award is really meant for that sort of sweet spot of up to 5 years out of your undergraduate experience to apply. Can I choose my topic of interest while the area interests? Okay, so those countries list disciplines of interest because there's likely institutions in that country who have already asked for that sort of support and help. But if your award falls outside of that and it's still an open all disciplines award, then you are still definitely eligible to apply for it. That's just specializations or special interest in those fields are just because there's an interest for it. But that does not prohibit you from applying for it. Perhaps I'm missing this, but I can't find past Fulbright Scholar projects where I can explore their project statement curriculum. I'm only seeing architecture. Okay, so hopefully your question was answered when I took us here to the Scholar directory. I'll take us back to our website. But here's an opportunity. I click Jordan. I'm clicking U.S. Scholar. So here are all the U.S. scholars who have gone to Jordan since 2010. This person was in journalism from Western Washington University. Let's click on Brian's profile. Here it is. He was there in January 2019 to May 2019, studying American society through journalism and mass communication at University of Jordan. So hopefully that helped a little bit. Do you need to specify the exact month in which you're going to visit three countries? Yes. Yes, especially if you're visiting three countries, all that multi-regional, they want very specific timelines and guidance in terms of what you'll be doing in each segment and when. I described my project in detail, and they said this in response to my question. The application deadline for U.S. students is October 13, 2020. You can find a timeline for... I see. Okay, so they... think that you're applying for the U.S. It sounds like they think you're applying for the U.S. student program. And yes, there is an internal deadline. How can I explain this? Most U.S. student grantees apply through their institutions, and there's an on-campus deadline that they meet every fall, usually in September. And then the final, quote-unquote, final deadline is October 13th for those institutions to submit those applications to IIE by October 13th. So that's yes, that makes sense to me now. The Fulbright student grant, the deadline for those submissions to us is October 13th. But if, again, not knowing a little bit more about your circumstances, if you are currently an enrolled student now or if you're a recent graduate from there, then likely your home institution has what they call a Fulbright program advisor who will need your application well before October 13th for your on-campus preliminary review at your institution. So that's the Fulbright student program. Okay. Is the Global Award more competitive than other awards? Yes, the Global Award is the most competitive Fulbright Scholar Award available right now. Sorry for follow-up on the bibliography. Do we upload the bibliography separate and our 3 to 5 page research proposal? Yes. There's a bibliography upload section and your research, your project proposal, your project statement is the 3 to 5 pages. I'm asking to understand where there will be a bibliography. I see. So you're asking about citing your research proposal, not a research bibliography. Okay. I would cite in text, if you're able, to your project statement. Gotcha. I thought you were referring to the bibliography related to research that you're doing. No, if you are wanting to reference things in your to cite things from your project statement, do it within the project statement. Okay, we're getting towards the end here. Where can I find out about programs representation for ambassadors? Ambassador requirement details. I'm sorry, I don't really quite understand the question. Programs represent. We have an alumni ambassador program that people who receive Fulbright U.S. Scholar grants apply to continue to serve in that role and capacity. We have several webinars introducing the ambassadors to that, but that's usually done on an annual basis in the spring. So if you are a Fulbright program alum, you should be receiving announcements about that as we send out announcements to all of our alumni when those competitions are open. Is there anyone you can refer me to about the Jordan Award? Yeah, so please go ahead and email us at Middle East northafrica@iie.org, and we'll try to get your questions answered. Should the bibliography include primary and secondary sources? Yes. Yes, bibliography should be as comprehensive as possible. Is there a multi-country award for the Middle East? Yes. Let's go to the catalog of awards. Oops, get that out of the way. So let's select the region. So there's the Morocco-Spain Award that we talked about briefly earlier, and there's the Middle East-North Africa Regional Research Award. So it's peer research. Three of these grants will be given this year. It's ability to conduct research in two or more countries within the Middle East and North Africa. It needs to be in at least two countries to receive the award, and they're for 3 to 9 months in duration. And in this case, somebody was asking about May 2021. So in this case, it says specifically August 21 is as soon as it can start. Okay. I'm applying at large and not affiliated with any student. Great. So then, yes, we just need, if you're applying for the student grant, then we just need you to submit that application to us by October 13th. If you're applying for the student program at large, the student program does not advise applicants just through the sheer volume of the numbers that they're dealing with, but all the more reason I think you might want to reach out to your previous institution to see if there is somebody who can assist you with that. They might not necessarily have to be the one submitting on your behalf of the institution, especially if you're an alumna, but that might be a good resource to plug into, since that advising capacity doesn't exist on the student program. Okay, we went over, but thank you all very much for participating. Oh, no. Yeah, the everything we've talked about today has been about the scholar program. The information for student program, unfortunately, is not available. So sorry, I'm not aware of opportunities to go to the Middle East student program. We have office hours. Thank you for that. Yes, we have a colleague who, my colleague Kimberly Williams, will be doing something very similar to this, just also answering questions about opportunities in the Middle East, East Asia, and the Middle East. It's every Thursday at 1 o'clock leading up to the competition. So if you didn't get your questions answered here, definitely swing by tomorrow, and we'll try to make sure that you get the attention. All right, thank you all very much. We really appreciate your interest in our program, and we look forward to receiving your application. Be in touch with any questions, and have a great rest of your afternoon. Signing off. Bye.